the Dean of eBay University, and that's Jim Griffith. Jim, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hi, Jason.
Hi, welcome to Technically Speaking.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So you are actually, what does that mean that you're the Dean of eBay?
Well, I started out with eBay back in 1996, first as a member of the what was then a very small community. And I spent all of my time when I wasn't buying and selling, helping others on the chat board figure it out. Came to the notice of the guy who founded eBay, Pierre Omidyar, and he contacted me in the fall of 96 and asked if I'd like to work for eBay. So I started working for eBay in 96. I was eBay's first customer support rep.
Oh, wow.
And I've been with eBay ever since. Kind of changed my life. And now I'm one of the members of a team that actually put together a education program for folks who want to learn how to buy and sell on eBay. And I wrote a book called The Official eBay Bible, and I spend all my time teaching people how to use eBay. So that's what I do.
So if you had to give sort of a short version of the process of using eBay to sell items, what would you say?
Well, the first thing to do before you sell on eBay is to understand it as a buyer. So anyone who's interested in selling should at least have bought one thing on eBay.
Right.
So that you understand the process from the buying angle. Really important to have that experience. You'll know what your buyers are going to go through when they're going to buy from you on eBay. And we all need to buy something. I buy something every day, just like almost every American citizen. And it's a great place to find stuff to buy.
That's true. Did you hear my nephew talk about his MP3 player that he purchased?
Yes, I did. It was a wonderful commercial.
So your suggestion is they go through the process of being a buyer first.
Right. So that's the first step.
Okay.
To anyone who wants to sell, you gain so much knowledge just from buying. You'll have you'll be a lot more comfortable when it comes time to sell.
That's true. That's very true. And what about the next step?
Well, the next step isn't to rush into anything. There's a great site on eBay. There's a great set of pages called the Learning Center. And if you're not at all comfortable with the idea of selling, or you feel that you need to learn some more about how to sell on eBay before you actually take the plunge, I suggest going through the tutorials there. I help put them together. In fact, my face is plastered all over them, kind of embarrassingly enough. But that's not my body when you see it. They actually put my face on a thinner body.
Okay.
Don't know why they did that. Yes, I do. That's okay. Another story altogether.
That's
so,
another show. Okay,
yes, right. And what they do is, what you do is you go through the process, and there's a series of tutorials, and it keeps track of your progress so that you can take them at any time and come back to them. And my advice is to take the basic selling course, and then that's the second step. Then you'll have a good idea of what a process is going to be like. Of course, there's nothing like doing it for learning it, so don't put it off. A lot of people get kind of stuck with this analysis paralysis where they take 3 months to look up, learn everything they can about something. The next step is to learn the marketplace. So know it as a buyer. You can approach it now as a seller. And you can do a lot of basic research on eBay for free. And it's really a good idea. It's a good strategy for getting a better idea of what your item is worth on the eBay marketplace and what you can reasonably expect to get for it. So say you're going to be auctioning off, maybe it's your secondhand computer. You want to know what secondhand computers are ringing on eBay. You can go to the category or run a search, and then you can click check a box on the left-hand side of the search page that says "Show me completed listings only."
Right.
That'll show you all the listings for the last 2 weeks. You can sort them and you can view them, and anything with a green price sold, anything with a red price didn't sell. And my advice to anyone is to look at both. Take a few of the ones that have sold, open them up, and see what a seller does to be successful, how they present themselves, what kind of photos they take, what their terms of service are.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that the most successful sellers usually have a higher rate of green prices in completed listings. And then take a look at some of the red prices. These are items that didn't sell. The most common reason, by the way, is in the auction format, the seller started the bid too high.
Right.
So that'll give you a good idea, not just what to expect, but maybe what to put on for an opening price.
Exactly. And I think when you sold your first item on eBay, your price was kind of high. That is, I know historically when I sell an item, I start out at $1 simply because I know that a lot of the bidders are going to drive the price up. And Wayne also did a comparison. That is, that when he went to sell the VCR, he did exactly what you just said, Jim. he looked up the other items, you know, other VCRs to see exactly what people were using as their description, the, you know, pictures and things like that.
He's just one smart kid.
Yeah, that's true. Jim, now, in reference to the feedback, I guess I'm jumping around a little bit here, but one thing that I really enjoy about eBay is the fact that its foundation is built on ethos, it's built on trust.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want to talk a little bit about the feedback and about the trust factor in using eBay?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, very early on in eBay, when Pierre had launched the site, there was no feedback. And he started getting a lot of feedback from sellers who were saying, you know, every time I sell something on eBay, I have to prove myself all over again.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to check my past history.
Right.
So Pierre invented this system where a buyer and seller can leave each other a comment. It's indelible, it's a public record on the site, and each individual member's feedback profile, and it's up to 85 character spaces where the other person can say anything they want, hopefully, you know, reasonable. We don't, we kind of frown on things that get a little too
embarrassing.
And, well, you know, some people, who knows, well, you know, it takes all types. We'll get to that in a minute. Comment can be either a positive, negative, or neutral. Every positive comment makes your feedback score, which is always shown next to your user ID on eBay,
Right. Makes
it go up 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
And there, it's a big deal when you get your first feedback point. You go from 0 to 1, and you feel like now you're a member of the club.
Right.
But there's some folks who have feedback close to 1 million
right
now.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So that's how the feedback works. And what it does is it provides a way for establishing your online reputation for everyone to see. And as a seller, it's crucial because you want to be able to prove to new buyers that you can be trusted to provide not only honest service, but good service. People expect everyone to be honest, but beyond that, you want to make sure you're going to have a satisfactory, if not pleasant, experience with the entire transaction, that the item will be packed well, it'll be shipped quickly. If there's any issues, the person will return it. And you can read what all past customers have had to say, and it'll give you a better sense of what this seller is like.
Yeah. One of the other reasons why I like eBay is because it encourages not just entrepreneurship, but it encourages a lot of freedom. For example, if I'm a stay-at-home parent, or I want to be a stay-at-home parent, eBay can, you know, help facilitate that move to allow me the freedom to, you know, maybe purchase things. One of the things my nephew and I do is go to the thrift store and we purchase things, you know, at really low cost, and then we can put them on eBay and allow the general public to, you know, decide what the value is. I know I purchased a Tandy TRS-80. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, those I do. Those
you
are
do?
Ancient.
Yeah. They're like Radio Shack, one of the first computers, and I got it for about $8 from one of the thrift stores here in Philadelphia on Belfield Avenue.
Yeah.
And I sold it on eBay for $80. And everybody's, people who do not use computers regularly wonder, why is that? And one of the reasons is there are people out there who love, you know, vintage items.
Yeah.
You know?
And especially now with computers, they have enough of a history that they are collectible. So
yeah.
Some of the old ones, like the old Apples, very old Apples, bring a lot of money. The original kit set.
Mm-hmm.
And old Osborne's, which were kind of the first laptop in a sense, but not really. And, yeah, all those old computers, including the Tandy machines from Radio Shack.
Exactly. So, Jim, if there, say that we have some people in our listening family who are still a little bit anxious about using eBay, what do you suggest that they do?
Well, like I said, the first thing is to, you know, peruse the site. There's no rush, so you should always peruse the site. eBay is a great place. You have a great time. I always take advantage, JC, when I have a chance to alert people that, not to be naive though, not so much with using eBay itself, but it is possible that you could be solicited for something that would be less than honorable. And I always like to warn people not to trade off the site through email, and never send anyone money through Western Union, for example. Never pay for anything through Western Union or MoneyGram. That's a hallmark of fraud on the internet.
Right.
But, you know, if you keep your common sense about you and you have an open mind and you're ready to explore, I say just get to know the website and then go to the Learning Center. And, of course, I wrote a book, but I don't plug it, so that I'm not going to talk. Yes, I do. It's the official eBay Bible. It's available at fine stores everywhere.
I was getting ready to say you're not part of the show if you don't plug.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Plug with yourself.
Okay, we'll get two plugs in. And then I always give my email address out. So if you run into a particular issue or if you have some listings up and you want them critiqued, I answer email 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I have no life. So you can email me at griff, G-R-I-F-F, G-R-I-F-F, at ebay.com. Mm-hmm. And I'll help with any eBay issue, problem, concern you might have.
Okay, perfect. And I know some of the things that we talked about selling on eBay. I know my nephew talked about selling electronic items, computer-related items, but people sell a lot of different things. They sell pictures, figurines, a lot of things, right, Jim?
Anything you can think of, and it's legal, you're going to find a market on eBay.
Right.
In fact, there's a game that we like to play where we think of something that's highly unusual, and we say, is anyone making a market in that on eBay?
Mm-hmm.
We'll always find somebody selling and buying it. So.
Yeah.
Especially if you're thinking about throwing something out.
Yes.
Don't.
Yeah.
Don't throw it out. In fact, don't even leave it to your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Put it up on eBay.
Don't leave it to
yeah,
them.
Don't leave anything for them. Make them work for their own stuff. So if they want it, they can buy it on eBay.
Capitalism at its best. But that's actually the things that Wayne sold were broken, like the VCR.
Mm-hmm.
And we always say in the description that it's broken because, there are people who do want to purchase those things at a low price and then fix them up. Yeah, pick for parts sometimes, fix them up, and then resell them. That's why they actually sell.
Yeah, in fact, you can never be too honest. If your item has a flaw and you take a
mm-hmm.
close-up, sharp picture of the flaw itself,
yes.
it instills buyer confidence.
Exactly.
If you know you're being honest. You know, another thing I didn't mention is if you want to sell on eBay, but you don't have the time or the inclination to do the work,
mm-hmm.
you can always find a trading assistant in your area. These are people who sell for others on consignment on eBay for a living. And there's a directory on eBay that you can search by zip code or area code. It's the trading assistant directory. It's real easy to get to. It's just ebay.com/TA. And you can find someone in your neighborhood who will sell your items for you.
Excellent. I think that Ken had. Do you have a question, Ken?
I was thinking about the piece about selling things that are broken, because I recall I use it a lot to actually buy things that haven't sold anything yet. But I do recall pieces of things being sold that are broken, like electronic devices, and actually the value really goes up. And sometimes you have a part of one piece, and people are selling something that's broken, and the pieces that are well or intact or just the piece you need, and they're much lower, easier to get.
And
also aged items,
yeah.
too, because like computers, my laptop is a Pentium 3. I got very cheaply, but I knew what I wanted out of a laptop, and it's like it's an excellent piece of equipment. It's also very tough. I've dropped it several times, but it's one of those truck laptops that I got real cheap from eBay because I had a little defect in it.
Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the part of the history of eBay is the first thing that Pierre, the founder of the site, ever sold on the site was a broken laser pointer. He actually pointed out that it was broken several places and said, look, this is a broken laser pointer. It's not worth much. I'm just putting it up to, you know, sell it. It brought twice what you could get for it new.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing that I noticed.
What's that?
That you can actually sell something at a higher price than you would actually... something that's broken at a higher price than you could probably sell something that wasn't broken.
Yeah, the chances for that are great if you're using, or more are better if you're using the auction format, because sometimes people lose their minds in an auction.
Yeah, that's exactly competitiveness.
They get into a battle,
yes.
and a bidding war, and of course that just benefits the seller.
Exactly. Well, Jim, I want to thank you again for joining the Nightly Speaking Radio Show. Could you just one more time give out your email address for people who may have questions for you later?
Sure, JC, I'd be happy to. Just email me at griff, G-R-I-F-F, at ebay.com, and I'll help you in any way I can.
Thank you again, Jim, and have a fabulous holiday.
Thanks, you too, JC.
We're going to take a break. Come back, we're going to talk with Sandra Lorimer from Computers for School. So stay with us.
Just call Gypsy Vane Technologies at 215-843-1039. Gypsy Vane Technologies create excellent websites. Gypsy Vane Technologies can register your web name and get storage space for your files. Put all your pictures on your website. Gypsy Vane Technologies even work with Flash. so that you can have a lot of exciting movement on your web page. Gypsy Lane Technologies even put your video and sound files on the internet. And Gypsy Lane Technologies has live web broadcasting. Just call Gypsy Lane Technologies at 215-843-1039.
Back on 900 AM WURD, your information station committed to solutions. I'm your host, J.C. Lampkin, for the Technically Speaking Radio Show. We're joined by Ken Houston, my co-host.
The one and only. Back fresh from the rolling hills of Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Ken, what was
Fellowship Farm.
Ken, what was the name of that program that you were doing at Fellowship Farm?
Called Keep Kids Safe.
Talk a little bit about that program, please.
Well, the youngsters were from Philadelphia, and most of them had some kind of experience with a violent death in the city. So the program was basically designed to get them out of the city into a safe community for a week, just to not think about survival skills, but more about having fun as a kid, and also learning some things about growing up that the counselors and facilitators would teach them at Fellowship Farm. And a typical day would start with a very healthy breakfast, and then a free time. They got to play basketball, and then we did an activity in the along the ropes course, which would be an activity. It's called a cargo net, and that's a cooperative activity where everybody has a role and has to help assist people going through the cargo net. Or they would do an activity called the spider web. It looks like a spider web. But that's an activity that involves planning with lots of choices. And one of the things that caused a lot of conflict with people is a lot of choices and a lot of resources, because then it takes a lot of time, a lot of discussion as to how to manage and distribute the resources. So the spiderweb activity is an activity that was very challenging with the youngsters, because it's, you know, getting your opinions in, having your opinions heard, listening to other people. And then it was an activity in which people had to pass other people through portals in the spider web of different sizes. So whenever you start talking about people's size, it's a personal issue, and that's a potential object for conflict. And so we were dealing with conflict resolution through solving a problem-solving activity called the spider web. Then there was a proverbial hikes in the wood, and the hikes were very steep hills, down steep hills, through very prickly bushes, and they had to assist and help each other. And there was we did it with an activity called the blind trust walk, where they divided in partners, and one partner was blindfolded and the other partner was not blindfolded. And we'd lead a team of, let's say, 20 kids in total through this blind trust walk. And then we'd take them in the woods and switch, and the one who was blindfolded would then become the guide, and the one who was the guide the last time would switch and become the blinded person coming out. And so they'd have to help each other through these obstacles. And I remember one particular pair, they were coming back, and I said, your partner really helped you coming through. And I said, now you'd be a good partner for them. And the blind partner said, she is being a good partner. They were defending each other. And I thought, oh, well, I guess they learned this lesson, so everybody take your blindfolds off. So we just worked together coming back through the woods. And then we also take them on night hikes without a flashlight. And they learn all about night vision. And then we have a discussion about what it must have been like to be in the Underground Railroad traveling at night, and being quiet, following the North Star, and dealing with, let's say, just in darkness and knowing that people are after you. So when kids thought about that, they were much more, let's say, willing to cooperate without the flashlight. But they were surprised to learn about night vision, how your pupils can open up, and you can see very well at night once your pupils open up. It's a different kind of perception, but yet you can see a lot of detail. And then again, I reflected. I said, okay, we talk about the Underground Railroad. Now you have uncles or relatives who are overseas in a combat situation, or maybe your parents were in Vietnam, and just think about having to maneuver at night and knowing that people are after you. So we're very lucky to be able to do this as a recreational activity, but other people have to do this as a survival skill.
Exactly. And did you notice any change in the young people's disposition? When from beginning the program to when the program was over, or towards the middle of the program, that is their personality.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. The youngsters come without a lot of interpersonal skills, so there are this marked changes in the skills from the beginning, the middle, and the end. In some cases, what would happen is toward the middle of the program, they get a sense of what we're talking about, because the youngsters come up to the farm, and they are missing some things when they get to the farm. They're missing a lot of background noise.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when we live around the city, I mean, I live in Germantown, so there's always police cars, fire trucks, big scepter buses, all kinds of gunshot thing going around in the background. So when you get to a place like Fellowship Farm, there's like no background noise. Mm-hmm. There's only like cicadas and natural sounds of the woods. So that's kind of a frightening experience. But once they get over that quietness, and then they get used to the people around them and develop trust and learn to work as a team, then they are much more cooperative. So in the beginning, you're kind of pulling the kids along and pulling them and coaxing them mm-hmm. into the program. During the middle of the program, they get a sense of what it's all about. They realize it's safe. So then the relationship, let's say, between me and the students becomes more of a partner. So we're sharing in the activities and doing things together.
Excellent. Thank you, Kenny, for telling us about the program. And if someone wants to get in touch with you to talk a little bit more about the program, or to find out what type of skills you have as a team builder and conflict resolution and counselor, how would they contact you?
Well, you can reach me through my email address, which is khouston21@sprintpcs.com.
So it's khouston21.
Yes,
number 21.
Yes, it's K Houston. It's spelled like the city in Texas or the street in New York, Houston. And you add the letters 21, so it's all one word, khouston21,
mm-hmm.
at sprintpcs.com.
Excellent. Thanks, Ken. And we're going to the phone lines now to speak to another one of our special guests who works for Computers for School. Sarah is a distribution manager for Computers for School. Sarah, welcome to the Technically Speaking Radio Show.
Thank you, JC. How are you doing?
Fantastic. How's the holiday treating you?
It's good. It doesn't really feel like a holiday weekend, but it's been good so far.
Good. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Computers for Schools program? I know that Willie was on the show last week, but since he has such a short period of time, and we know that our listening audience really, you know, wants this information since they've been calling me for it, I thought we would have you, at least someone, a representative, call back and tell us about the Computers for Schools program.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Our organization is a nonprofit. We have offices in both Chicago and Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
and there are two main things that we do.
The first thing is probably getting you back on the phone line. Sarah, we really apologize for losing you, but we're going to get you right back on the phone line, and here you are now. Sarah, welcome back to the Technically Speaking Radio Show. Sarah?
Hello?
Hi, welcome back. I really apologize for that. Go ahead and finish telling me, please.
No problem. I was just saying that we take donations of computers and upgrade them to school standards and then offer them back to schools at cost. We also run a program that's been extremely successful, in which we partner with school districts around the country and offer low-cost computers to parents of any students. The reason that we partner is because of our licensing agreements with Microsoft, but we make the option available for parents to purchase computers for either $150 or $200.
Yes.
We warranty all of our computers for 3 years and have a tech support line.
Oh, excellent. So for the computers that are $150 or $200, what type of condition are they in? What could a person expect, a parent expect to pick up?
They definitely are capable of doing, you know, DSL internet.
Mm-hmm.
They come loaded with a open source office suite. It's called OpenOffice, which is completely compatible with Microsoft Word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually use it on my computer at home myself, and you don't notice a difference. And you can do, you know, Excel spreadsheets and stuff like that in it. The $200 systems come with a CD burner, so if parents want to load music onto the computers, they're able to do that. And they come with a user manual.
Mm-hmm.
Teach people who haven't really had a lot of opportunity to use computers before how to do so, as well as a hidden feature that we call Simple Restore. In case your computer should get a virus, you're able to completely reinstall your operating system and bring your computer back up to new as long as you've saved all of your information on it.
That's great. Now, how would our parents pick up one of your computers, or how would they get a chance to take a look at them?
What you would actually want to do is have the parent contact someone in the school. We would need to coordinate with either, you know, a technology person or a principal at a school, even a parent volunteer, as long as the school approves of running the program. The parent would contact them, and then we would set up a program, which we run in a 6 to 8 week cycle, allowing the parents basically to turn in their order to the school, and then the computers would be delivered to the school, and they can pick up there. We found that this is really convenient for organizations to do it this way, because then parents don't have to try and figure out a time to come to one of our warehouses. Everything's right at their child's school. They can do that and pick it up. If they have any additional questions beyond that, I can give our 800 number, and they can call our 800 number, and we can see how we can work with people individually as well.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and give out your 1-800 number just in case our parents run into any problems at their school?
Sure. Our 800 number is 800-939-6000, and my extension is 31.
Excellent. So that's 1-800-939-6000, extension 31?
Right.
Perfect. Thanks, Sarah, for joining us on the Technically Speaking radio show. Is there any other information that you wanted to share with our listening family?
No, I think that's about it. Just, you know, give me a call. I'd be happy to help you out with any needs. If you don't have a child attending school, like I said, we would definitely work with individuals on a case-by-case basis to see through what avenue we might be able to help someone out.
Perfect. Thanks again, Sarah. You have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you. You too.
And we're here at 900 AM WURD, your information station committed to solutions. This is our special back-to-school program here today at the Technically Speaking Show. And we have on the line Susan McLester. Susan is the editor-in-chief of Technology and Learning Magazine. And since one of the things that we're trying to do here today is to ensure that our young people, our parents, and our teachers have enough information, are equipped with the right tools to make sure that our students have a bright future, we brought in a guest who can tell us a little bit about, you know, technology in schools. Susan, welcome to the Technically Speaking radio show.
Thank you.
So how is your holiday weekend working out for you?
Great. It's wonderful to have a few days off.
That's true. I guess it's kind of working, though, talking about the Technology and Learning Network, huh?
Well, you know, it doesn't really feel that much like work. It's sort of something I've done for 13 years, so it's pretty natural for me now to be talking to people about technology in schools.
Mm-hmm.
And often I get into this conversation just in a casual way in a social setting when people say, you know, do we really need technology in schools? And when I hear that, I sort of can't believe it.
I know.
Because I think that to some extent, people in the general public might be a little bit in denial as far as the extent to which technology has really revolutionized the way we work today and communicate.
Oh. Now, for technology and the Technology and Learning Network, you have three different properties, right? You have a magazine, you have a website, and you have events.
Right. Our magazine is 26 years old. It began, you know, for a very niche market of sort of the real kind of propeller head educators who were writing their own software code and so forth. But now it's evolved into, you know, very much a mainstream publication as technology is used throughout schools, you know, in a commonplace way. We also have six events around the country. All of these things can be seen on our website at techlearning.com. And our events are for K-12 educators. And we also have, as I said, the website where we have all the publication content archives, as well as additional information, things written by educators listed up there, a lot of how-to and practical information, and information about our events itself.
Now, Susan, since you've been working in this area, you know, a long time, you've seen a lot of different changes. How has technology changed the face of teaching and learning in the past 25 years?
I think it has done it significantly in some places, and in other places it hasn't done much at all. That's a problem that we face today because there is a growing digital divide.
Yes.
Between those who have access to technology and access to well-trained teachers who know how to use that technology and to teach with it, mm-hmm. and those who don't. Basically, it's really where technology is being used effectively, the opportunities are amazing. I mean, if you think about it, students now have all the information in the entire world at their fingertips, at instant access. This is something that was never true before when we were older people like me were in school. I mean, we used to spend a lot of time looking for the information. Now the kids can find the information immediately, but the problem becomes, once you have it, what do you do with it?
Right.
It's an opportunity for you to get into higher order thinking skills like analysis and synthesis and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The problems are that now we have to make sure kids know how to authenticate the information they're finding. Because they may learn how to read and write like we did, but just reading and understanding and comprehending can get them in trouble if they don't know how to decide what's true, what's not true.
That's right, yeah. So they need a lot of guidance, you think, our children need?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Media literacy is the term that's pretty much being these days for teaching kids how to authenticate websites that they find. There's plenty of websites up there. Yes?
I have a question for you with what you're saying. Would you think that that solution of reading different opinions would help them authenticate? Because a lot of the opinions, a lot of the information is opinion. So, you know, just having a looking at challenging points of view would be helpful.
Oh, I think absolutely. I think one of the wonderful things about the web is that it lets you probably read 360-degree opinions about mm-hmm. a particular topic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At the same time, what I'm saying about the authenticating websites is there are plenty of sites up there that say the Holocaust never took place, that
okay.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you know, they need to know how to look down and see whose website it is, what their agenda is, mm-hmm. go on Google, find out who that person was, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree with you, yes.
That's what I mean by the controversy. I mean, it's useful to know that people have that opinion. And then I would probably teach kids to read someone who has opinion that showed it does. So that, because they're going to encounter these people for real. I mean, there are people who live in Pennsylvania, and I won't mention specific counties, that have that opinion. And if you're not aware of these thoughts, you're going to bump into these people, the kids will, and be totally off guard as to how to respond to them. So, you know, it is useful to know that these sort of inauthentic people exist and how to also find people that have the opposing point of view.
I agree completely, yes.
So, what are some of the ways that you suggest that our educators help bridge the digital divide? What are some of the challenges to integrating today's technology into schools?
Well, I think, you know, for schools, it's always a matter of money. They're always strapped. So, you know, getting in there, writing the grants, doing what you need to do to help make sure you have the technologies and also a high bandwidth, which is important these days. But the real obstacle that's been throughout the last 25 years has been teacher training. There really just hasn't been enough of it.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, a lot of the teachers aren't up to speed on computers as well. You'd be surprised. I mean, it's like the students are, in some cases, more advanced than the teachers.
Oh, almost always.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that the students are really showing the way in a lot of cases
mm-hmm.
for, you know, how to use things, how to fix things, that whole thing. So, getting the teachers up to speed is really important, yes. And getting the, making sure that the administration has the vision that asks people to do this.
Right, and that we support our educators and vice versa. Our educators support our teachers and the community at large because it's going to take all of us. Right?
Home and school associations also are a very valuable tool. You know, if the teachers and the students are ready, then the home also has to be ready for a computer. And a simple thing like having three prongs mm-hmm. and your outlet can make a big difference as to whether people decide to go forward with it or not, because it shows that the understanding in the parents and the home about whether the value of a computer, if that's not there, it's hard to get into those homes. But once you get in there and you open that door, then it changes very quickly.
That's a good point, Ken. And Susan, could you hold on for just a minute because we have a caller on the line. We have Robert from South Philly. He might actually have a question for you in particular.
Okay.
Robert, welcome to the Technically Speaking Radio Show.
Oh, good afternoon. I'm enjoying your show. And I was prompted to call as a result of a comment and I guess concern that was just voiced in terms of when you bridge the digital divide or the type of information that flows. And I'm involved with a project developing the satellite connectivity to the first rural area in Ghana.
Really? Tell us about that.
Well, basically it's a town called Agogo, which is the Ashanti region of Ghana, mm-hmm. under the auspices of a paramount king by the name of Nana Okoku Sarpong. And basically, through a sister city's relationship out of Fort Lauderdale, combined with an organization called Citrix Systems Incorporated, in conjunction with another organization called the Digital Development Partners, we're all partnering together again to have that first satellite connectivity developed in a rural area as part of, and also the Kofi Annan ICT of calendar year 2006. So the end of December, we're looking to actually launch it. The center itself has about 25 stations that are set up presently,
mm-hmm.
and we're working on, again, the satellite connectivity as well as a file server that would be used to, you know, download information, which is the point of my call, is that we tend to think about when you bridge this digital divide, especially in rural areas and developing countries, we always think about things coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our focus, especially for the African-American, is that there's a lot of things that we've lost from a traditional cultural standpoint that can come out of rural areas to help educate us about, you know, our heritage and how we can conduct ourselves to be more civilized, you know, as a result of our ancient tradition. So
mm-hmm.
I just always like to point that out, that yes, it's what comes in and it needs to be filtered.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
But also there's a lot to come out. So we're ensuring that that process works both ways.
That's right. And that's one of the key things we have to do in our community. Thank you, Robert, so much for your call.
Thank you.
And Susan, did you want to share with our listening family some of your contact information?
Oh, yes. Again, our website is techlearning.com. And we are a CMP publication that's got a lot of publications. So my email is smithlester@cmp.com if people like to get a hold of us and more.
Say one more time, just slower, for your email address.
S. McLester, that's S-M-C-L-E-S-T-E-R, at C-M-C, that's CharlieMichaelPeters.com.
Excellent. Thank you again for joining us on the show today, Sarah.
Thank you.
Have a fantastic holiday.
Thank you. You too.
And since this is the back-to-school show, and we have our young people here in the studio, we're going to let them get ready to close out the show for us today. And Patrice, would you go ahead, please?
Thanks for listening to Technically Speaking with host my aunt J.C. Lampier. Join us again next. God bless you and have a fabulous, sex-filled week.
Sons and the daughters of life, longing for the top, they come to you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You can give them your love, but not your thoughts. They have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts. You can have their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You can try to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Try to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Your children are not your children.
They are the sons and the daughters of life, longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You can give in your love, but not your thoughts. They have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts. You can house their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which you cannot visit now. Not even in your dreams. You can try to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Try to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you.
Just call Gypsy Lane Technologies at 215-843-1039. Gypsy Lane Technologies create excellent websites. Gypsy Lane Technologies can register your web name and get storage space for your files. Put all your pictures on your website. Gypsy Lane Technologies even work with Flash so that you can have a lot of exciting movement on your web page. Gypsy Lane Technologies even put your video and sound files on the internet. And Gypsy Lane Technologies live web broadcasting. Just call Gypsy Lane Technologies at 215-843-1039.